Access number 30,005, Mr. Ted Hitchcock, Reel 7. Now, so what happened when you got back then? I mean, did you just drop back into it?
Yes, we, I don't know, we're more or less, yes, took over where we left off.
Had anything changed at all?
Not really, no. No, we're still doing the same thing.
Can you tell us a bit more about the box formation? Had that developed anymore that you flew in? I mean, you told me about it earlier, but, you know, it's almost 2 years later. And had it changed the formation?
Well, no. No, it hadn't. It hadn't. I'm trying to think when we went, but we
September.
We had a spell at Aston Down, which was the fighter leader school. And this was early on in the Mitchell days, because we spent some time there with the fighter boys working out best forms of attack and best forms of defence. It was quite interesting, actually. They were all, fighter leaders, and they were interested in finding out the best way to attack. And of course, we were sorting out the best way to get out of it.
And you stuck to the box, but
yeah.
Box system.
We always worked in the box system.
Can you just explain it again, just in case anything else comes up this time? What was the box formation?
Well, there was a leader. He decided exactly what he was going to do. He did all the evasive action. Numbers 2 and 3 flew.
So everybody else would conform to him?
You work on him, you bomb on him, everything's done on the leader. But numbers 2 and 3, one either side, slightly above the leader and slightly behind. Then number 4 flew under his tail, and number 5 and 6 formated on number 4. Slightly below and slightly behind. So when you looked at it from the side, you'd got 2 and 3 at one height, number 1 just below, number 4 just below that, and then 5 and 6 below there.
Now, that's exactly as you described. Now, that hadn't changed.
No, that stayed, and you always turn into a fighter attack. So that meant that you turned and you could bring all the guns to bear if necessary.
Now, what sort of targets? You seem to have been operating, in September, October, November, on targets to help the infantry, the troops. And the
Well, we were support, army support.
Can you explain what army support was? What sort of thing were you doing?
Well, anything, if they were having problems. Arnhem, for instance. Now, we would do to leave Hartford Bridge to go to France. And we were all waiting to go over to France. When we got a signal, came through, to bomb the aircraft up, go and bomb in the Arnhem area, and then carry on to the new unit, Vitry. Well, as it happened, we did actually bomb up. We went and we dropped the bombs, and we set off for Vitry, and then we got a recall
back to
Hartford Bridge. Yeah.
And what were you bombing? You bombing the railway bridges and looked at them?
Well, whatever the army wanted. It was support for the army.
Now, you then seem to go to Vitry on Artois.
Yeah.
Well, now that seems to be very early November.
Well, the squadron was posted there. But when we knew for a long while where we were going, and Sir Basil Hendry was in charge, and he said straight away, 226 Squadron will remain operational throughout the move. And it was worked so that that was possible, and that's what happened. Part of the ground crew were sent over to get ready. The admin staff went first, then part of the crews, and it was operated from both sides, which he did it because he didn't want to. I mean, normally when a squadron moved, you packed up. You know, everything was parcelled up and packed up and whatnot. And he didn't want that. He wanted, the army still wanted the support. So we kept operational.
And what were your billets like at Vitry? I mean, where were you living at Vitry?
At Vitry, the officers lived in quite a big place. In its own ground, but we were in huts at down the side of the airfield.
And what were the huts like?
Well, they were a bit rough. They'd all got there was about, I think it was 7 or 8 of us in a hut with a big stove. And what we were short of fuel. We had a job to get hold of fuel. And so the lads used to, there'd be 2 or 3 crews that meet in one hut and 2 or 3 in another and sort of make the most of it. We'd got showers, but they didn't work as well as they should have done. If you knew the plumber was coming to do the showers, he used to queue up because he'd get them working for a time, but it wouldn't be for long. But anyway, it wasn't bad.
Would you go out to a 7-8 in the evening? What would you do if you got the plumber?
You could go out. Yes, you were free to go if you wanted to.
Did you go out much?
Not a lot, no. I never was one for that. I mean, I like to drink. But to travel miles to get a drink and then travel back wasn't my idea of fun. Unless there was anything special on, we used to drink in the mess.
Who was your officer? Did you say to Basil Hendry? I didn't quite catch it. Who was in command of the squadron?
Oh, we had quite a number of COs. You'll see the sign at the end of the month.
What did you think of your officers? Generally, are there any that stick out in your mind?
Well, generally speaking, they were very, very good.
What made a good CO officer for you? What did you look for in them?
Well, they were pretty good. There was no doubt about that. I won't say they were one of the boys because they weren't, but. No, we got on all right, but usually the NCOs kept away from the officers. You know, the officers had got their own mess and they used to collect and socialised together, and the NCO did the same thing.
Were there many mixed rank crews? I mean,
Oh yes, yeah.
Do you think it was better to have an all sergeant crew for you, or?
There were very few. We were the only crew that I know that went through all of the same rank. We were all sergeants together, we were flight sergeants together, we were warrant officers together, we were all commissioned more or less at the same time. And there weren't many crews like that.
Now, anything you remember about those raids, you know, in the winter, November, December, still in the Mitchell 2, I see. This is where that raid was on Venlo.
Ah.
They can sort that out themselves. Any other raids you remember? Was the blackout often as bad as that?
Well, not, no, there weren't, no. That was a bad one. And, of course, we were at the tail end of it. But it was a bad raid. No, not really. I mean,
did you go into Germany? You seem to go to Germany. Still on tactical raids, was it?
Well, yeah, there were support raids in most cases for the army. Support for the army, yeah.
Were you getting more nervous in this
sense? No. No.
I mean, you said you're quite often nervous, but you seem to manage to keep going.
Well, it's difficult to explain, but it's a different life entirely. And I suppose if you're that way inclined, if you're a worrying type, you've got something to worry about. But I'd made up my mind I was going to come through, and more or less convinced myself that I was.
On the basis of what?
I don't know. It was just one of those things.
Religion, or anything like that, or just confidence?
No, I just that was the way I felt.
So you didn't get more stressed as you went along?
No.
Did any of the others? Were there other people who did so?
Oh yes, we had fellas pack up, LMF they called it, lack of moral fibre.
Now, what did you think of people who went down? I mean, you hadn't, you know, what was it? Because it was quite controversial.
If a bloke cracked, he cracked. But I know of one particular case where this fellow went LMF, and he was a DFC, a DFM. He got a DFM as a sergeant. He shot down a 109. Which he claimed, and nobody believed him until it was verified by the fighters. On a raid a short time afterwards, they were attacked again. This was in the Boston days. They were attacked again, and he got a Vickers gas operated gun, and they are fed from. Not from a belt, felt from a what do you call it? And he was having a job to get this on, and this fighter was closing, and he threw it at him. So when he came back, he was this ammo short. Look, and he was congratulated for his aggressiveness by group. And then, a short time afterwards, he decided he had enough.
His nerve again?
Well, yes, he'd had enough. And so he was posted to West Raynham to report to the sergeant in the cookhouse as an LAC. He was stripped from sergeant or flight sergeant down to LAC.
Now, what did you think of that? Did you think that was fair?
No. No. I didn't. In fact, we went over to West Raynham on an air firing trip, and Tom and myself decided to see if we could find Chick. Chick Milner, his name was. And we went along to the mess. We saw the sergeant and said, it possible to see Chick Milner? And he said, well, what's he done? Said he hadn't done anything, but we're a friend of his and we'd like to have a word with him. And Chick, we met him, and he wasn't wearing a brevet. And Tom said to him, where's your brevet? Oh, he said, I got fed up with answering questions. So he didn't wear it. And he was quite happy as an LAC. That's a low rank. And that was it. But I mean, this LMF business, in some cases it was all right, I suppose, but in that case it wasn't.
Now, what you were commissioned at, well, Colin suddenly appeared as a pilot officer in September. Is that when you were commissioned as well?
No.
He was first, was he?
He got commissioned first.
When were you commissioned?
Well, there's quite a long story attached to this, because I didn't want a commission.
Now, why didn't you want a commission?
I just didn't want one. I was quite happy as I was. I mean, warrant officer is the highest non-commissioned rank there is. You're quite happy. I didn't want a commission. And we heard that Collie had been recommended. And both Reg and Tom, they put in for commissions. And the slight commanders we'd got hadn't been with us very long. And they said that they couldn't recommend them because they didn't know them well enough. So that was turned down. Short time afterwards, I was walking around the perimeter track, and a flying officer came towards me. And I recognised him. He'd joined the squadron at the same time as I did, or more or less. They got a commission very early, that crew. And this fellow had come back as gunnery leader. So we had a natter, and then he says to me, where's your smooth? That was the name given to a commission. Your smooth. Oh, I said, I don't want a smooth. Well, he said, you're having one. Because he said, I'm going straight back to the office to recommend you. So I said, well, hang on a minute. And I told him about Reg and Tom, you see. So leave it to me. And we were all three recommended.
And when was that?
Oh, I can't remember.
Did it make a big difference?
Well, it made a big difference because we were in France at the time, and when the commissions came through, and the officers were living in a chateau. I couldn't think of that name a bit ago. We were living in a chateau, so it meant moving from the huts we were in on the airfield over to the chateau.
What was the officers' mess like in the chateau?
It was good. It was good.
It was. What was it like? You describe it.
Well, I say it was good. I think if I remember rightly, they only did breakfast The rest of the meals were on the drone. But there were local girls came in and did the cooking, and it wasn't bad. And if there was something you didn't like, you put an egg on the table and you got to, put a packet of cigarettes on the table and you got an egg. But generally, the food, I found the food very good.
Did they make you welcome in the mess?
Oh, yes, yeah. You see, you were with these blokes in the crew room. I'd been with a lot of these fellas. I'd seen them get commissions. And in the crew room, rank didn't mean very much. You know, you were all sort of hanging together there. It was the same when you went on an op. Transport was provided. Everybody booked in, and rank didn't mean a thing.
But you hadn't mixed with them, though. I mean, you hadn't socialised with them before.
Hadn't
socialised with them.
Well, no.
Did you drink in the officer's mess? Was it a formal mess? Or was it pretty informal?
Oh, it was informal.
So were you glad you'd been commissioned in the end?
Hmm?
Were you glad you'd been commissioned in the end?
I was in the end because we all kept together. And we've kept together right the way through, right since the war.
Now, anything else? Towards the end, I mean, any of the raids you remember in the bin are going into 1945?
Not particularly, but if you look there towards the end, you'll see that we led the second box on quite a number of occasions.
Now, what does that mean, leading the second box?
Well, it means that the leader, you've got two boxes, and the leader of the first box, of course, is usually flight commander or even the CO, and he's in charge of the raid. The leader of the second box has got exactly the same job to do, we led a lot of raids. It was a good pilot, and we were a good crew.
Now, anything else you recall? I mean, can you talk a bit about accuracy of the bomb? You know, yeah, I mean, you're meant to be precision bombers. Would you hit your targets? I mean, and would there be take photographs to prove it or otherwise?
There's a stack of photographs in there of Venlo Bridge.
But they can't see them. Can you just tell them?
Yes, in a lot of cases, yes. Usually it says in there, in the logbook, target pranged or something like that.
So you photographed. How was the photograph taken?
There was a camera that worked automatically when the bombs went.
So that was just time delayed as you flew over it, and then it would picture where the bomb landed?
Well, there were actually photographs that showed you the bombs bursting.
Was your bomb owner exceptionally good, or was everybody pretty good in the squadron?
Were what?
Were they mostly accurate, the bomber?
Fairly accurate, yes. Yeah.
Any particular incidents or close escapes you remember, you know, you seem to have led lead the second wave a lot. Second wave is the seventh box, In fact, you nearly always do as you go into 1945.
Well, towards the end, yeah.
Any particular things you remember?
Well, Well, Tom was here last week, as I say, and whenever we get together, he always remembers one thing, which we had a Polish squadron came to us to learn to fly the Mitchell. And they came and they lived in the mess. And then on one trip, for some unknown reason, I suppose they wanted to operate, there was one of them flew at number 6. We were flying at number 4. We flew at number 6 and we just turned onto the bombing run. And Tom says the bomb doors were open. And suddenly he screamed to Collie, "Dive, for goodness sake," or words to that effect. And one of these Poles had lost us in the formation. He hadn't turned, he'd lost us. And he was above. And instead of flying away to the side and looking where the box was, he was coming down like this. And he's coming down on top of us with the bomb doors open. And Tom shouted, and we're on the bombing run, "Dive." And Collie dived. Now, if he'd have stopped to say, what's the trouble, Tom, he'd have been too late. And Tom always brings this up. And it wasn't, I looked up and I could have counted every rivet in the bottom of that aircraft.
So about how far away?
He was only feet above us. He's coming down like this. And he's got his bomb doors open. That was a bit of a shaker.
Any other incidents like that? Or is that the closest?
Well, I think that was the closest, yes.
Now, did you get any new wireless or electronic equipment over that too? Because you've been with them a long time.
The stuff we'd got was American. Was fitted in the aircraft. These were leased-lend aircraft that we were flying.
So it was the same stuff at the end?
It was the same stuff.
No new navigation or anything?
No, we did have what we called G-bombing.
And you mentioned, have you always had that?
No.
The G-bombing
was an extra bloke that he used to carry with his contraptions and used to bomb through cloud. It was blind bombing, really. But we did a bit of it, but not a lot.
Was it accurate? I mean, would you know it was accurate? I mean, how accurate did it seem to be?
No, when the job was out, when you got back and the job was done, that's it. You'd been out on a trip and you'd dropped bombs and you hoped you'd done your job.
Yeah,